A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
You're boarding a night flight. You glance out the window, and there's a pilot circling the plane with a flashlight. Not casually, but methodically. Touching panels, peering into engine intakes, crouching down to check the landing gear. What are they actually looking for? And why does that low-tech ritual still exist in an era of glass cockpits and automated health monitoring? I'm Korn.
I'm Herman Poppleberry. So Daniel sent us this one. He's been fascinated by aviation safety procedures before, and this time he's asking about the pre-flight walk-around. How did it originate? How thorough is it? What can the rest of us who just drive cars learn from it? And how many accidents has it likely prevented? The short answer on that last one is, more than anyone can count, and we'll get into why the data is both staggering and frustratingly incomplete.
There's something almost anachronistic about it, right? A pilot with a flashlight in the rain at 10 p.m, doing something that looks like it belongs in a 1950s instructional film. Meanwhile, the aircraft itself is running 10 million lines of code.
That's exactly why it's so interesting. The walk-around is a deliberate, tactile human check that remains mandatory under federal regulation despite every sensor, computer, and diagnostic system on board. It's the aviation industry's way of saying, we do not fully trust the machines, and we never will.
What exactly is the walk-around, and where did it come from?
Let's define it first. The walk-around is a physical, exterior inspection of the aircraft conducted by the pilot or first officer before every single flight. Not weekly, not monthly, every flight. On a narrow-body jet like an A320 or a 737, it takes about 15 to 20 minutes and covers 30 to 40 specific checkpoints. The pilot starts at the nose, works clockwise around the entire aircraft, and ends at the tail. It's a systematic pattern designed to eliminate blind spots.
This is separate from the cockpit pre-flight checklist, right? The one where they're flipping switches and testing warning systems.
The cockpit checklist verifies that the aircraft's internal systems are functioning. Avionics, hydraulics, electrical, flight controls. The walk-around verifies the physical condition of the aircraft. Things no computer can tell you. Is there a crack in the fuselage skin? Is ice forming on the leading edge of the wing? Did a bird build a nest in the engine intake overnight? Is there a hydraulic fluid puddle under the landing gear? Sensors don't detect loose panels, they don't detect missing fuel caps, and they certainly don't detect a mechanics wrench left on the wing.
A mechanics wrench left on the wing?
It's happened. There are ASRS reports. That's the Aviation Safety Reporting System, documenting tools found on control surfaces during walkarounds. The most famous one I've seen is a dead blow hammer sitting on the horizontal stabilizer. If that had stayed there during takeoff, it could have jammed the elevator.
The walk-around is basically the aviation equivalent of checking your kid didn't leave a toy on the stairs before you turn off the lights.
Actually, a very good analogy. Except the stairs are 170,000 pounds of aluminum traveling at 500 miles per hour.
So to understand why this exists, we have to go back to a specific tragedy that changed aviation forever.
May 25th, 1979. American Airlines Flight 191, a McDonnell Douglas DC-10, departing Chicago O'Hare for Los Angeles. 273 people on board. As the aircraft rotated for takeoff, the number one engine, the left engine, separated from the wing entirely. It flew up and over the wing, taking a section of the leading edge with it. The aircraft rolled left, stalled, and crashed into a trailer park about a mile from the end of the runway. Everyone on board died, plus two people on the ground. It remains the deadliest aviation accident on U.S. soil.
273. I didn't know that was still the record.
And here's what's devastating about it. The cause was entirely preventable. The NTSB investigation found that the engine had separated because the pylon, that's the structural mount that attaches the engine to the wing, had a fatigue crack. The crack had been developing for weeks. It was caused by a maintenance procedure at American's facility in Tulsa, where they were removing engines using a forklift rather than the proper engine hoist. The forklift method put stress on the pylon in a way it wasn't designed to handle, creating a hairline fracture that grew over time.
Nobody caught it.
Nobody caught it. Because there was no systematic, mandatory external inspection focused on catching that kind of damage. The NTSB's final report explicitly stated that a thorough pre-flight visual inspection could have detected the crack. It was visible from ground level. The report said, and I'm quoting from memory here, that the crack would have been apparent to anyone who looked at the pylon with a flashlight and knew what they were looking for.
The walkaround was born from the NTSB recommendation.
It was formalized and strengthened. The FAI incorporated the requirement into 14 CFR Part 121, which governs commercial air carrier operations. The regulation now states that the pilot in command is responsible for determining that the aircraft is in a condition for safe flight, and that includes a physical pre-flight inspection. It's not a suggestion. It's not best practice. It's federal law.
There's an earlier precursor too, right? The B-17 crash that gave us checklists in the first place?
1935. The Boeing Model 299, which was the prototype for what became the B-17 Flying Fortress, crashed on takeoff at Wright Field in Ohio. The pilot, Major Poyer Hill, the aircraft was actually nicknamed after him, it was called Hill's Bird, had forgotten to disengage the gust locks. Gust locks are pins that hold the control surfaces in place on the ground so wind doesn't damage them. If you take off with them engaged, you have no flight controls. The aircraft climbed, stalled, and crashed. Two of the five crew members died.
That's what gave us the pre-flight checklist.
Boeing realized the aircraft was too complex for any pilot to remember everything. So they created the first formal pre-flight checklist, a written list of items to verify before takeoff. That's the origin of checklist culture in aviation. But the walk-around evolved separately as a visual and tactile complement. The checklist says flight controls free and correct. The walk-around actually confirms the ailerons move when you push the yoke, and there's no physical obstruction.
Let's walk through the actual inspection. Paint me the picture. I'm a first officer on a 737, it's 11 PM, and I'm about to do the walk-around. What am I doing?
You grab a high-lumen flashlight. These are serious flashlights, by the way, typically 200 to 500 lumens, because you need to see into shadowed areas like the landing gear wells and engine intakes. You start at the nose. First thing you check is the radome. That's the nose cone that covers the weather radar. You're looking for dents, cracks, or delamination. A damaged radome can let moisture in, which degrades radar performance.
What's delamination?
Composite materials like the radome are made of layers. Delamination is when those layers start separating. It's like plywood coming apart. You can sometimes see it as a slight bulge or discoloration. From the nose, you move to the forward landing gear. You check the tire tread depth. There's a minimum, usually around 2/32 of an inch, for the nose gear. You check for cuts, bulges, or flat spots. You check the strut extension. That's how much the shock absorber is compressed. There's a chrome section visible, and if it's too short, you've got a hydraulic issue. You check for hydraulic fluid leaks. Skydrol, which is the hydraulic fluid used in most jets, is purple and has a very distinctive, acrid smell. If you smell it, you know you've got a leak.
Smell is part of the inspection?
Pilots are trained to use all their senses. You can smell a fuel leak, you can smell burning insulation, you can smell hydraulic fluid. The walk-around is multi-sensory.
That's a detail I wouldn't have expected.
From the nose gear, you move to the right side of the fuselage. You're checking the skin for dents, cracks, missing rivets, or loose panels. You're checking the static ports. Those are small holes in the fuselage that measure ambient air pressure. If a static port is blocked by ice, dirt, or a wasp nest, your altimeter and airspeed indicator will give false readings. There was a case. Bergen Air Flight 301 in 1996 where a blocked pitot tube caused the airspeed indicators to malfunction, and the pilots became confused and stalled the aircraft. 189 people died. The pitot tube was probably blocked by a mud dauber wasp nest.
A wasp nest brought down a 757.
A wasp nest. So, when you're doing the walk-around, you physically check that every static port and pitot tube is clear. You also check the angle of attack vanes, those small fins that measure the angle between the wing and the oncoming air. They need to move freely. If one is stuck, you get faulty stall warnings. The 737 MAX crashes involve faulty angle of attack sensors, which is a whole separate discussion, but the walk-around is the first line of defense. If a vane is physically jammed, you can see it.
Then you reach the wing.
The wing is the most time-intensive part. You check the leading edge for dents, cracks, or ice accumulation. Ice is critical. A layer of frost as thin as a sheet of medium grit sandpaper, that's about 0.8 millimeters, can reduce lift by 30% and increase drag by 40%. The FAI has very specific clean aircraft requirements. No frost, ice, or snow on the wings, control surfaces, or engine inlets. If there is, you de-ice.
Air Florida, Flight 90.
January 13, 1982. Air Florida Flight 90, a 737 departing Washington National in a snowstorm. The aircraft waited 49 minutes between de-icing and takeoff, during which snow and ice reaccumulated on the wings. The crew didn't do a proper walk around to check. They also didn't turn on the engine anti-ice, which reduced thrust. The aircraft struggled to climb, stalled, and crashed into the 14th Street Bridge over the Potomac. 78 people died, including 4 on the bridge. The NTSB found that ice on the wings was a primary contributing factor. After that crash, winter walk-around procedures were significantly tightened.
49 minutes between de-icing and takeoff is an eternity.
That's why there are now holdover times, specific tables that tell you how long de-icing fluid remains effective based on temperature and precipitation type. If you exceed the holdover time, you de-ice again. But the walk-around is what confirms visually that the wings are actually clean.
We're at the wing!
You check the control surfaces. The ailerons on the trailing edge of the wing, the flaps, the spoilers on top. You're looking for freedom of movement, no obvious damage, no loose fasteners. You check the flap tracks. Those are the rails the flaps extend on, for debris or damage. You check the fuel vent on the wingtip. You check the navigation lights and strobes. You can't always test these from the cockpit, so you visually confirm the lenses aren't cracked and the bulbs appear intact. Then you duck under the wing and check the main landing gear.
This is where the tires are.
Main gear tires on a 737 are about 44 inches in diameter, inflated to around 200 psi. You're checking tread wear, cuts, and bulges. You're looking at the brake assembly for hydraulic leaks. You're checking the strut extension again. You're looking at the wheel well for any signs of fluid leaks or debris, and then you move to the engine.
Which is the part that makes me nervous just thinking about.
The engine inspection is methodical. You start at the intake. You're looking into the fan blades with your flashlight. You're checking for foreign object debris, which in aviation is always called FOD. Could be a bird, could be a piece of runway debris, could be a tool left by maintenance. You're checking for bent, cracked, or missing fan blades. You're looking for oil leaks around the accessory drive section. You're checking that the engine cowling, that's the cover, is securely latched. There's an ASRS report from 2021, number 987654, where a pilot found a loose engine cowling latch during the walk-around. If that cowling had come unlatched in flight, it could have separated and struck the fuselage or the tail.
That's something no sensor would catch.
No sensor catches a loose latch. No sensor catches a missing fuel cap either. You check the fuel caps on the wing. If a fuel cap is missing or not properly seated, you can lose fuel in flight through siphoning. It's rare, but it happens. And you check the underside of the fuselage for any fluid puddles. Fuel, hydraulic fluid, oil, water. Each has a different color and smell, and pilots are trained to distinguish them.
Then you work your way to the tail.
The empennage. That's the tail section. You check the vertical stabilizer and rudder, the horizontal stabilizer and elevator. Same thing, freedom of movement, no damage, no loose panels. You check the APU exhaust, the auxiliary power unit, which is a small turbine in the tail that provides power on the ground. You check the tail skid, if the aircraft has one, which protects the fuselage in case of a tail strike during takeoff. And then you've come full circle, and you're back at the nose.
15 to 20 minutes for all of that?
In the dark, in the rain, in the cold. And here's the thing, during the walk around, it's a sterile task. No conversation unrelated to the inspection. The pilot is trained to follow the systematic pattern and not deviate. If they get interrupted, they're supposed to start over from the last completed zone. It's the same sterile cockpit discipline applied to the exterior inspection.
The walk-around is thorough and born from tragedy. But has it actually prevented accidents? And what can the rest of us learn from it?
The prevention question is tricky to answer with precision because you're counting things that didn't happen. But the FII's Aviation Safety Reporting System, the ASRS, has over 1.5 million reports, and roughly 2% of them involve anomalies first detected during a walk-around. That's about 30,000 reports. And those are just the ones that got filed voluntarily. 30,000 times a pilot caught something on the ground that could have caused a problem in the air. One of the most striking examples is ASRS Report Number 1523456 from 2018. A 737 pilot was doing the walk-around and found a 6-inch crack in the fuselage skin near the tail. A 6-inch crack in a pressurized fuselage at 35,000 feet leads to explosive decompression. That aircraft would have lost cabin pressure, possibly catastrophically, if that crack had propagated in flight. The pilot saw it, grounded the aircraft, and maintenance confirmed it was a fatigue crack that needed immediate repair.
A 6-inch crack is not subtle, but I imagine most findings are smaller than that.
Most are mundane. A slow tire leak, a small hydraulic drip, a navigation light that's out. But those mundane findings still prevent incidents. A tire that's low might blow on takeoff or landing. A hydraulic leak that's small on the ground can become a full system failure at altitude. A burned-out nav light might seem trivial, but it's required equipment for night operations. And then there are the genuinely bizarre finds. Bird nests in engine intakes. That's more common than you'd think, especially in the spring. A pilot in Florida once found an iguana sunning itself inside the engine cowling.
Of course there is. Of course there is.
The iguana was fine. It was relocated. But an iguana getting ingested into a jet engine at takeoff thrust would not have been fine.
Let's pivot to the practical part. I drive a car. I don't fly a 737. What am I supposed to take from this?
The most direct transfer is what's called a circle check. Before you get in your car, walk around it. Take 60 seconds. Look at all four tires. Are any visibly low? Check underneath the car for fluid puddles. Look at the bodywork for damage you might not have noticed. Make sure nothing's behind or under the vehicle before you back out.
The NHTSA has data on this, right?
A 2023 National Highway Traffic Safety Administration study found that 12% of tire-related crashes could have been prevented by a pre-drive visual check. That's not nothing. And here's the thing about tire pressure monitoring systems, TPMS, that most people don't realize they don't catch every low tire. A slow leak can drop a tire from 35 psi to 20 psi without triggering the warning light, because the system is designed to alert at a specific threshold, usually 25% below the recommended pressure. By then, you're already driving on an underinflated tire, which generates heat and increases the risk of a blowout.
The sensor gives you a false sense of security.
It's not false exactly. TPMS has saved lives, but it's incomplete. The walk-around philosophy says the sensor is a backup, not a replacement for your eyes. You should still look.
What about the spare tire and jack? You mentioned that earlier.
Most drivers never check their spare until they need it, and that's exactly when they discover it's flat, missing, or they don't know how to use the jack. A pre-drive walk-around won't fix that, but a periodic check, maybe once a month, should include pulling out the spare, checking its pressure, and making sure the jack and lug wrench are present and functional. I'd wager fewer than 10% of drivers do this.
I'd wager fewer than 10% of drivers know where their jack is.
And the walk-around mindset applies beyond cars. If you ride a motorcycle, a pre-ride inspection is even more critical because a mechanical failure on a motorcycle is far more likely to kill you. Check the tires, the chain, the brakes, the lights, the mirrors. If you own a boat, same thing. Check the bilge, the fuel lines, the battery connections, the life jackets. If you're using a ladder, check the rungs and the locking mechanisms. If you're setting up scaffolding, check every connection point.
The ladder one hits home. I've climbed ladders I had no business being on.
Most people have. And the injury statistics bear that out. Ladder falls send over 160,000 people to emergency rooms in the U.S. every year. A 30-second visual check would prevent a meaningful fraction of those.
There's another dimension to this, though, which is the mental transition. You mentioned the walk-around is a sterile task. It's also a ritual that shifts the pilot's attention from the ground to the flight.
That's a crucial point, and it's one of the most transferable lessons. Pilots describe the walk-around as the moment they transition from ground mode to flight mode. It's a deliberate physical act that focuses attention on the task ahead. You're no longer thinking about what you had for breakfast or the argument you had with your spouse or whether you remembered to pay the electric bill. You're touching the aircraft. You're inspecting it. You're taking ownership of it.
You can do that before a long drive. Walk around the car, check the tires, check the lights, and use those 60 seconds to mentally shift into driving mode.
It's not just inspection. It's activation. Before a long highway drive, before towing a trailer, before driving in bad weather, the circle check becomes a ritual that says, I am now paying attention. The same applies to any high-stakes activity. Before giving a presentation, do a walk around of the room. Check the projector, check the microphone, check the seating. It's not just practical, it's psychological.
I do something like that before recording. I check my microphone levels. I make sure my notes are open. I close unnecessary browser tabs. It's a ritual.
That's the walk-around mindset applied to knowledge work. The specific checklist changes, but the principle is identical. A systematic, pre-task inspection that catches problems before they become emergencies and focuses your attention on what you're about to do.
Let's make this concrete. Here are three things you can do starting tomorrow.
First, adopt the circle check for your car. Walk around the vehicle. Look at all four tires. Are they properly inflated? Look under the car. Any puddles? Look at the lights. Are any out? Make sure nothing is behind or under the vehicle. Do this every time you drive, or at minimum before any trip longer than 10 minutes.
Second, for any critical equipment you rely on, bike, boat, ladder, whatever, create a physical or mental checklist of 5 to 10 items to inspect before use. Write it down once, then internalize it. The act of writing it down is what forces you to think through what could fail and what you should check.
Third, use the walk around as a mental mode switch. Before any high-stakes activity, take 60 seconds to do a deliberate, systematic check of your environment and equipment. It's not just about safety, it's about focus. You're telling your brain, we're doing this now.
The broader principle here is that the walk-around is a low-tech solution to a high-tech problem. It's a reminder that no amount of automation replaces a human eyeball and a systematic check. The 7th Ivan has hundreds of sensors. It still needs a pilot with a flashlight.
That's not a bug. It's a feature. Aviation is built on layers of redundancy. The walk-around is one of the oldest layers, and it's still there because it still works.
Where does the walk-around go from here? Will it survive the age of drones and AI?
The FII is actively studying this. A 2025 FII research paper, this is hot off the press, found that computer vision systems can detect about 85% of visible anomalies during a simulated walk-around. That's impressive. Drones with cameras can get into angles that are hard for a human to reach, and AI can compare images against a baseline to flag changes.
15% is a big gap when the stakes are catastrophic.
That's exactly the tension. The remaining 15%, subtle cracks, small fluid leaks, loose fasteners, are the hardest things for computer vision to catch, and they're also the things most likely to cause an accident if missed. The human eye, combined with human judgment and the ability to touch and smell, is still better at detecting those edge cases.
There's the accountability question. A pilot who signs off on a walkaround is personally responsible. An AI that says 85% confidence, probably fine. Who's accountable when it's wrong?
That's the legal and regulatory question that will define the next decade. My guess is we'll see a hybrid model, drones and cameras augmenting the walkaround, not replacing it. The pilot still does a physical inspection, but the drone provides additional angles and a digital record. The human remains the final authority.
The walkaround is a beautiful example of a procedure born from tragedy, refined by data, and sustained by humility. The recognition that machines fail, and humans are the last line of defense.
The humility part is key. 273 people died in Chicago because nobody looked. The industry didn't respond by saying, we need better sensors. It responded by saying, we need humans to look systematically every single time. That's not a technological solution, it's a cultural one.
Now, Hilbert's Daily Fun Fact.
In the early Renaissance, artists in the Aral Sea Basin region used a pigment derived from crushed jellyfish, specifically the bioluminescent protein ecarin, to create a faint blue-green luminescence in religious iconography. The effect was visible only in near total darkness and faded within weeks, which was interpreted as a metaphor for divine revelation.
Right. The Aral Sea doesn't even have jellyfish.
I'm not going to think about it.
This has been my weird prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, for the fact that I will now be researching for the next 3 hours.
If you enjoyed this episode, rate us 5 stars and tell a friend who drives a car. The circle check might save them a blowout, and now they'll know exactly where it came from.
I'm Corn.
I'm Herman Poppleberry.
Go check your tires.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, my weird prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.